Welcome to the Future of Agriculture podcast, the show that explores the people, companies, and ideas that are shaping the future of agribusiness. Innovation, resourcefulness, and collaboration are essential for feeding a growing population, and we believe the agriculture industry is up for the challenge. Please welcome your host, Tim Hammerich.
Hey, everybody. This is the Future of Agriculture podcast. My name is Tim Hammerich. I'm an agribusiness recruiter and the founder of aggrad.com that connects students and young professionals to hiring agribusiness. Well, it has been an extremely tough fall for me. It is now December of 2016, and I could not be happier to be off the road, at home, back in my home office, and trying to catch up for some lost time from being mainly out on the road for most of the fall between weddings and work events throughout the past few months. So other than a trip to Wyoming for the Christmas holiday, I will be at home until the end of January, in which I'll be in Atlanta for the IPPE. Unlike a lot of my fellow professionals in the industry, I am not good at being a road warrior. It seems like whenever I go out on the road, everything that I'm supposed to be doing on a regular basis seems to stop, and I am left with a mountain of work and things to do when I get back. So if anybody knows any good life hacks for that, I am all ears, because I'm staring at just a mountain of work to catch up on in the coming months from traveling so much this fall. So like I said, I couldn't be more grateful to be back here. If any of you are going to be at the IPP Expo at the end of January in Atlanta, I will be there and would love to meet you in person. So please just hit me up at Tim Hammerich on Twitter. And speaking of Twitter, Twitter is where I found our guest for the Future of Agriculture podcast here today. He is very active on Twitter, among the most active in the agricultural circles, I would say. Extremely witty and sarcastic and entertaining, and that caused me to be intrigued when I heard he had a podcast. I discovered his podcast 2 weeks ago, loved it from the first episode, and kind of binged on it a little bit, listened to several episodes over the course of 2 or 3 days. I think you're really going to get a kick out of him. His name is Rob Sharkey. He is Shark Farmer, the Shark Farmer podcast, and Shark Farmer on Twitter. So be sure you follow him and check out his podcast. If you're liking agricultural content that you're hearing here, I'm positive you're going to resonate with his message on his podcast as well. So I would recommend you check that out. Sharkey and his family farm in central Illinois, primarily grain farmers, but they also have their own business doing outfitting for deer hunters in central Illinois. What drew me into his content most was just his authenticity, and there were several questions that I wanted to ask him in the context of what I've always wanted to ask a farmer, but didn't think he'd answer honestly. I had a lot of fun with this interview and this conversation, and I think you'll have some fun listening. So please enjoy this interview with Rob Sharkey of the Shark Farmer Podcast. We have the Shark Farmer, Rob Sharkey, on the podcast today. Rob, thank you so much for joining.
Hey, Tim. No problem.
I was just talking to you before we started kind of rolling here about your podcast and how I just found it a couple weeks ago and just kind of binged out on it and listened to over the course of maybe 3 days almost every episode. What made you want to get into podcasting, and kind of tell us how the journey's been for you?
Well, of course, I had it all meticulously planned out that I was going to end up exactly where it was. And no, not at all. Originally, I had made a really good friend. She's my best friend, Carrie Zelka, and she has got a very, very large hunting podcast. And she guided me into, well, she basically taught me from, you know, step one, how to you know, set up a podcast and do it. And originally, it was going to be a hunting podcast because I'm a deer outfitter. But really, my true passion is farming, is agriculture. And so it morphed into that within the first few episodes. And it's kind of gone the route of talking about, you know, farmers and their stories and how advocating should be, you know, put forth to the general public.
And one of the things I love about the way you interview people is you put them on the spot. So I'll put you on the spot here a little bit. What's been your favorite episode to do so far?
Oh man, seriously? Now that's not even fair because you're a podcaster and you know how bad that question is. But.
Yeah, but trust me, it's one of my favorite parts of your podcast is you're just always so honest and straightforward and authentic and you don't let people get off the hook. So I can let you off the hook on this one if you just give us a couple that you really enjoyed doing.
Well, one of the surprising ones, I had been friends with the Snarkosaurus, the grain trader from Chicago. I had no idea that he was going to come on and just hit so many points with the farmers, you know, a guy that's not a farmer, but just kind of, you know, somewhat related to ag. And he really struck a chord with a lot of people. And that's, I guess that's when I really saw the numbers starting to reflect. And you know, old Snarkosaurus did me pretty good.
Nice. You have a huge following on Twitter. Why are you not at Shark Farmer?
Well, I was originally, and then I'm kind of a jerk. So when my wife said, you know, I don't think you could quit Twitter, I wanted to like prove it to her. So I did. And I had at Shark Farmer was probably somewhere around 5,000 followers. And so I just shut it down. And I don't know. I had gotten a bunch of, you know, spam people at that point. So it wasn't as fun. And it hasn't been quite 2 years now that I started up with this one. But when I went to go get Shark Farmer, someone else had it. So that's the long and short of it.
Gotcha. And how long did you go without Twitter?
I think a year.
Wow. And so you've already built up your following past 5,000, aren't you?
Yeah, I hit 6,000. So very humbling.
Absolutely. Well, on one of your podcast episodes, you talk about hitting some hard times. I think it was in the 90s, if I remember right. And in order to get out of it, you and your wife had to buckle down. And I think you said you had at one time 8 different businesses to kind of get out of that. Can you talk about that time a little bit and maybe what the 8 businesses were that kind of got you out of it?
Yeah, it was a very tough time. We tried our hands at hog farming and we couldn't have timed it any worse. And it wasn't just timing. There was a lot of mistakes on my end too. We were broke. I mean, we were as broke as you could be. There was no more on the credit lines. There was just nowhere else to get any more money. So we decided that we were just going to do anything we could to get out of that debt, because we went to the bank and they're basically saying, well, at your age, you know, you should just file bankruptcy and, you know, hit the reset button. But I think it was key that my wife and I both agreed wholeheartedly that we were just going to dig our way out of the debt. So we started doing whatever we could. You know, I remember going over and, you know, pressure washing hog stalls for a neighboring farm. Just, you know, whatever I could do. So we started different businesses. In 99, I started a whitetail deer outfitter where we were leasing some of my neighbor's ground and for the hunting rights. And then we would bring in hunters from pretty much all over the country to come. Because I'm in an area that's got really nice whitetail deer. We took over a producer-owned buying cooperative where farmers were getting together and buying their, you know, seed and chemicals and fertilizer, you know, kind of buying it in bulk. We did that, which that would also lead into a lot of seed corn. We were doing seed corn sales, different type of seed sales. We were selling rocks, you know, like field stones and that. We even did that for a little bit online. That one didn't do so well. But, you know.
So not pet rocks, rock like you'd put on your driveway.
You know, if they wanted to make a pet out of it, you know, I'm not one to judge. So, no.
Fair enough. Probably better margin in pet rocks.
Yeah. Again, the rock thing, there's some transportation issues there. So that one didn't make any money.
Very cool. It's really an inspiring story. I'd encourage anybody who hasn't heard the Shark Farmer podcast to go check that out, because it's really inspiring, I would say, what you guys were able to do and the fact that you just kind of made the decision to do whatever it took. You mentioned your deer outfitting. I know you are famous for taking the Obamas hunting. Would you also take the Trumps hunting, or are you partisan on who you outfit?
He didn't go hunting. We talked about hunting, but no, I would love. Well, and I think his sons hunt if I remember. So no, that, yeah, open invitation. Well, of course I would charge him because, you know, they've got the money.
All right. Well, I'm sure that someone in the Trump family, or at least the administration, is listening. So maybe we
can set that up. Well, yeah. I mean, everybody listens to this podcast, so I'm sure. Hi, Ivanka. How you doing?
Well, I'd like to ask you a series of questions that I'll entitle questions I've always wanted to ask a farmer if I could find an honest one.
Oh, man. Okay.
All right. So here we go. Number one, you've probably heard, because you're online probably as often as I am, if not more, you see campaigns like thank a farmer, hug a farmer, love a farmer. You know, we should be internally indebted to farmers because they feed us. What do you think as a farmer of those types of messages?
You know, it's funny. I guess I just don't see them geared towards me as much. And I don't even know how to explain that. It just seems like they are. I don't even notice them. But I had a chance to interview Will Evans from over in Great Britain. And he made some really good points about how they were almost, I don't know, offensive. He didn't use that word. But, you know, his point was, you know, we are a business. Yes, we do. We provide something that's vital, you know, your food. But, you know, other businesses provide, you know, clothing and heat and housing and that. So he was not a big fan of it. And that was, you know, it's funny you asked that question, because ever since that interview, I kind of looked at those campaigns and, you know, at a different light. But I guess they don't bother me, but I guess I don't get a warm feeling from them either.
Is that advocating to you, those types of campaigns? Or how do you define advocating? And do you consider yourself an advocate? That's a mouthful, by the way, to say that.
Advocate. I can't even say advocate anymore because of, yeah. I do consider myself an advocate. I consider anybody who is trying to promote agriculture in any way an advocate. So I don't know. Those types of campaigns, whether that is advocating, I suppose it is. You know, everybody looks at how it affects them personally. So I'm sure there's some people that really enjoy the thank a farmer type of thing.
What do farmers do over the winter other than do podcasts and drink whiskey?
Well, I'm hoping to get a cool video game or something to binge on, but no. we're still getting stuff cleaned out from harvest and that, and we'll just start bringing in piece of machinery after piece of machinery, so we are ready to go for spring. You know, like the planter itself, it seems like it always takes about 2 weeks to completely go through. So that's what we'll be doing, plus so, drinking.
Yeah. Is that mainly maintenance and cleaning and just kind of getting it tuned up for the planting?
Yeah. You know, when planting comes around, I do not want to be messing with the equipment. I want it to be ready to go and just hit the field running.
What's the big deal why do a lot of farmers feel compelled to choose between red and green equipment?
You know, I guess I'm going to call a little BS on that. And believe me, I know there is a ton of people that are very color specific, but you know, you can argue there's differences in combines. Like these tractors, I've looked at them both. I buy John Deere because I have a John Deere dealer with an incredible bunch of mechanics there that is just 3 miles from my house. If it was a red dealer, I would have red tractors. To me, they're pretty much the same.
There's probably a lot of people listening who are in sales that sell to farmers. What sort of feedback or advice can you give to somebody who wants to sell you either seed, chemical, fertilizer, equipment? What do you wish they would know before trying to approach you?
Well, I would like them to know what they're talking about, you know, for one. That I find that always helps. But I, you know, just be honest. You know, I've dealt with salespeople that I'm still dealing with that did not know the answers right offhand. The difference is they would say that, you know, they would say, well, I'm not sure, you know, I've got to check on that. I can respect that. And I think most farmers will too. I would hate to sell to farmers. Man, we're so diverse. We're so crabby and grumpy and stuff. But, God bless the guys that do it. And gals, I'm sorry, the people that do it.
You introduce a lot of your guests on your podcast, I noticed, as cyber bullies. Did you realize that?
Yes. Yeah, that is on purpose.
Are, generally speaking, are farmers cyber bullies?
I don't know. I guess I am, so I just guess I figure everybody else is too.
All right, you're doing great here. I was expecting to like pepper you with these questions, but you're really taking them in stride. What's something that other farmers do that drive you nuts?
Hey, well, and it's kind of the know-it-all attitude, I guess. You're talking a whole big country out there of different way to farm, different soils, different, you know, climates. So there is not going to be a one size fit all in farming. And that frustrates me when farmers come off that way, that, you know, this is a way to do it. And, you know, look at me type of thing.
That's a great point. In fact, that's the reason one of the reasons I do this podcast is because I get to take the point of view of somebody who knows nothing so that I can mask the fact that I know nothing and just find out from the people who do.
Well, I mean, isn't it interesting? You're talking to people all over the country. And I think that as far as like social media has been one of the best things for agriculture. I mean, just think of what you know now compared to what you know 10 years ago before you were your network expanded, you know, to all of North America.
Yeah, it's really fascinating. I really do learn from every one of these interviews, and I'm sure you do as well. I learn from every one of your interviews, really. What do you still farm hogs as well as grain?
No, I got out of hogs in 2008. My dad retired in 2008, and I told him that I just didn't have the heart for it. I that was not my passion, and I knew that if I kept trying to go that route, that, you know, I feel you've got to love what you're doing, and I did not love raising hogs.
What do you love about what you're doing now?
Oh, I love the whole process of a plant growing up, you know, from putting the seed in the ground to, you know, just the end, the harvest. I mean, just the stuff that you even can't explain. I mean, you, like that sound of the wind coming through the corn, or, you know, the smell of that grain drying in the dryer. I mean, that stuff, it means more than I can really put into words. It is loving what you're doing. And I know damn well how lucky I am to be able to continue farming.
Yeah, it sounds like a, you know, really deep connection between you and what you do. And I've heard that from other farmers as well. What would you tell someone who's young and didn't grow up on a farm but wants to get into farming because they're attracted to that very same thing?
Yeah, that is one thing that I think people that have grown up in a farm family and have been able to come back to that farm always need to realize, is how lucky we are for that chance. People that have grown up a farm or love agriculture but do not have an opportunity to come back, when they succeed, I think that's probably one of the greatest stories in ag there is, because that is a tremendous amount of work when you are either starting on someone else's farm or you've started from scratch. I mean, that's an incredible story that person should be more proud of than anything.
Absolutely. Is there any topics or issues agriculturally related that you have changed your mind about in the course of your career?
Yeah. You know, even with like the podcast with Agvocating, that's definitely, it's changed my mind to talk to some of these people that are not farmers, but are wanting to, you know, help promote agriculture. You know, I hear why they're doing it, and it was reasons that I did not realize. So, you know, listening to their story and understanding what they were talking about, that has definitely changed my opinion.
I agree with your broad definition on advocating, you know, anybody who's promoting the industry. What do you see out there on Twitter or wherever else, people who are trying to advocate and they get wrong?
I don't like the clicks, and I've been pretty open and honest about that, which does not always gain me favors in certain circles. But I appreciate if you've been advocating for a long time, but when I see you putting someone down that is trying to advocate in their own way, that's where the cyber bully comes out. Because I don't want to just sit by and watch that. And that's generally where I call it out. And you're generally calling out someone that never gets called out because they are a very, you know, well-established and large advocate.
I appreciate you saying that. You know, for me, my career has been in kind of feed and grain merchandising. I wasn't very active online up until about a year ago when I got into recruiting as a result of, you know, starting from scratch in the recruiting business. So I definitely see what you're saying, where there's certainly levels and some exclusivity there. And it's neat to have somebody like you who's well-established and well-respected in that arena to say that, you know, the door is open for whoever wants to promote the industry.
Well, I mean, have you seen anything? I mean, you've started out here, like you said, you were kind of, have you had any instances where you felt like maybe someone was kind of putting you down?
You know, there's been incidents where I wasn't directly put down, I wouldn't say, but I was certainly ignored, or I haven't felt like it's extremely inclusive bunch all the way around. I guess I'll say that. There's been nothing directly where somebody said, you know, oh, you're an idiot for what you're doing. But certainly there are cliques. I think that's the way you put it is probably best. There are cliques where if you've been around for a certain amount of time and you've been associated with a certain group of people that you're either in or you're out. Luckily, I've got someone on my team who's been advocating for a lot longer than I have. And so I think she has helped plug me in certain circles, but there's still other circles where it's very exclusive. I think that's probably what you're referring to as well.
But to be fair, you're a pretty mean guy. I've heard you like on your guests, man. You're like hard on those guys.
Yeah. See, that was the next question I had for you. Why are you so hard on your guests? No, I do try. I do really. What I love is the story, and I try to bring people on that I think have really interesting stories, like I think you do. Your story about you used to be a lot more active in like Farm Bureau. I know you said on one of your podcasts, and you've kind of gone your own independent route. And I didn't know you back in those days, and we hardly know each other now other than social media. But I can tell you the way that you speak with you just speak your mind is extremely appealing and very, very engaging. So I don't know what you're like in the Farm Bureau days, but I'm glad you're where you are now.
I was not like that in the Farm Bureau days. I was not at all. I was basically saying what I thought other people wanted to hear. And so, you know, when I started this podcast and when we, you know, I figured out what direction it was going to go, it was going to be an all or nothing. You know, I was just going to be completely honest. I was just going to speak my mind. And, you know, if it went, great. And if it didn't, at least it was under my own terms.
Right. I can relate to that. You know, I grew up very heavily active in the FFA world. And then, you know, you're working for a big corporation. You're constantly, I don't know if everybody is, but I was constantly worried that I was going to make a bad trade and get fired or say the wrong thing and get fired. And so coming out on my own has kind of helped me start to open up my shell and feel like I'm finding, you know, my voice and my own opinions. And it's liberating. So I can relate to that to an extent.
So what do you think? Do you think the podcast is the next thing coming up?
Yeah, I do. I still think we're early in the podcasting world, especially in ag. When you think of how many people are in a tractor cab or a pickup all the time, and you look at how many podcasts outside of yours and mine and a few others that are just basically market reports or somewhat dry, I think there's a ton of opportunity for people in agriculture to be in the podcasting world. And in fact, I'm surprised more people aren't doing it. I wrote an article last summer about why I think podcasts are perfect for ag. I mentioned a few of them. If I would have known about yours, I would have definitely mentioned yours as well. So I need to redo that to include Shark Farmer Podcast because it's become a recent favorite of mine. But yeah, I think we're early in this process. What do you think?
Well, you know, you and I are totally biased on this. So
yeah, listen to us.
Of course, yeah. Well, podcasts are definitely the next big thing.
Well, I wouldn't do it if I didn't believe in it. So yeah, you're right. I'm a bit biased. I know you've got kids that want to take over your farming operation. As you look to that timeline, what do you think will look very different about your farm when the kids take over?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'm not sure I know the answer to. The size has always scared me. You know, when you look at what I think I need to be to have, you know, at least one kid come back, and then if it's multiple kids, I think it's just going to have to be a situation where their main source of income can't be the farm right off the bat. Now, my wife and I have made a decision that our kids are not allowed to come back to the farm right away. We want them to go work somewhere else, you know, cut their teeth somewhere else for a few years, because we didn't do that. And yeah, I think we maybe regret, I don't know, is we always kind of wondered what it would have been like if maybe we would have went somewhere else, learned some other things, and then come back.
And your wife is from a farm background as well?
Both her sets of grandparents farmed. Her dad was a soil scientist with the USDA. So there's definitely ag in her blood.
And so with you, if you want to grow your operation, that probably involves taking on a lot more risk, wouldn't it?
I guess. I mean, it's all of it's risk. We do have, you know, some different options with the outfitter. You know, that is that's not just a hobby. I mean, that's an established business for us, which coincides very well with the farming. It seems to be the niche that I have where I can't compete, you know, dollar for dollar with some of my neighbors. But when it comes to some of these properties that have some timber on it, that's where I seem to be able to compete because I can also make money on the hunting side of it.
What's your least favorite part of farming?
Well, paperwork. I mean, being in the office, I mean, that would be the least fun.
So as long as you're outside getting to work on the farm, you enjoy it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't mind the bad jobs, you know, like cleaning out the dryer, stuff like that, where you would think you guys would be unhappy with. I mean, I didn't even mind like hauling manure, stuff like that. But yeah, you know, I don't read that well. I just never have been able to, even as a kid, you know, just struggled through high school, struggled through college. So, you know, when you get there in front of the numbers and that, it just, I don't know, it seems like it takes forever to do. So yeah, I do. I like being outside. I like trying to figure stuff out, you know, fabricating equipment, that type of stuff. But yeah, the bookwork, that gets pretty old.
So with not enjoying reading that much, what drew you to Twitter?
140 characters. I can do that. I can do that all day long.
I like that as well. You know, Twitter for me, I have just recently kind of understood it. I've been on it probably since 09 or 10, but never really, I didn't understand it. I thought it was about broadcasting, you know, everybody talking and nobody listening. And then I realized, oh, this is really just to interact kind of one-on-one, and then everybody else can join in if they want.
Yeah. I don't know. I really enjoy it. I mean, the friendships I've made over it, the stuff I've learned over it, I really enjoy it.
So you mentioned grain dryer, right?
Yes.
So do you have on-farm storage for your grain?
Yes. Yeah, I can generally store about a third of my crop.
Can you, just because we've got a few minutes here and I'm a grain nerd from way back, can you fill everybody in who maybe not from a grain background? What's the thought process on storing your own grain versus just taking it to the local elevator?
Well, the local elevator, of course, will take your grain and will store it or sell it, but they also charge a fee. And, you know, putting up the bin, that initial cost, of course, is high, but it seems to be one of the things that pays for itself rather quickly. If you're putting that corn in a bin, generally, not always, but generally during the fall, or that's when the prices are the lowest because everybody's picking and sending corn in and selling it or filling contracts. So you want to try to save your corn for different parts of the year, say like your January through July. The problem is when you take it up to the elevator, you know, they're going to charge you a fee to do that. Where if you have on-farm storage, you can do that yourself. So you can kind of cut out that middleman of it.
Gotcha. Yep. No, I think that's interesting aspect that not a lot of people realize. They think, you know, I've had a lot of people say, well, why do all these farms have silos, right? They always call them silos. And they don't understand why you wouldn't just take it in and get the money right away. So thank you for that.
Yeah, do not ask me a marketing question, though, because I'm a horrible marketer.
Well, you've interviewed some marketers on your podcast.
I know. Yeah, and I'm glad they're good at it, but I am way too emotional when I sell my corn.
Yeah, I always had a farmer, no matter which elevator I worked at, I had farmers that would say, waiting for the bottom before they wanted to sell, because they're just convinced as soon as they sold, the markets were going to rally. later this week, you are going to the Ag Chat conference to give a talk on podcasting. Can you give us a sneak peek into what information you're going to convey to them?
It's a dual podcast with the Chickwire, Barb Siemens, who just came in and spent a few days hunting with us. And so I got to meet her, and she's very, very cool. So we're going to do a dual podcast. We're going to talk a little bit about what kind of audience listens to podcasts, you know, what kind of advocating is, that's the route we're going to go.
Cool. Well, I won't get to see you this year, but I hope to attend one of those in future years and maybe get to meet you in person. But before I let you go here, can you just tell everybody how they can find you online and start listening to your podcast and cyberbullying you?
Yeah, you can just search Shark Farmer on any of the podcast engines, you know, iTunes, Podkicker. You can follow me on Twitter. Your best bet is just to search Twitter for Shark Farmer, because my handle is just ridiculously awkward. So those are the places you can find it.
Great. And really, I'm not blowing smoke here. I really do enjoy your podcast, and I hope everybody listening here will tune into Shark Farmer podcast as well. But do you go by Rob or you go by Sharky? I guess I never even asked you.
There has been people that I've known for years that didn't know my first name was Rob.
Okay. All right. Well, Sharky, thank you so much for being on the Future of Agriculture podcast, and we will catch you on Twitter.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Tim. Keep up the good work.
Thanks so much for listening all the way to the end here. If you are listening to Sharky and I talk about podcasts and podcasts in agriculture, and you think, you know what, I've always wanted to have a podcast in agriculture, you know, I'd be happy to pay it forward and help you out. Let me know your concept, what you're interested in doing, and if there's any way I can help you get set up. I'm by no means an expert. I'm only 30 episodes in, but I'm happy to do that because I think this format is perfect for the agricultural industry, and everybody has their own unique narrative to tell. So I hope to have more agricultural podcasts on the future of agriculture here on future episodes, and maybe it's you. So if you're interested, let me know. Happy to help out. Again, I don't make money from helping people set up podcasts. It's not something I plan to do on a regular basis, but if there are a few of you out there, I would love to listen to more agricultural content. So if you're interested in being on this side of the mic, just let me know. Enjoy your week. We will be back next week with an interview I think you're really going to enjoy from the editor of AgFunder. So if you're not already getting the AgFunder updates and engaging with their content, why don't you go ahead and start now? And we'll be back on with her a week from today. Thank you so much for listening to the Future of Agriculture podcast.
Thank you for listening to the Future of Agriculture podcast with Tim Hammerich. Visit aggrad.com. That's aggrad.com today to get connected into careers in the agriculture industry. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next week.